Hello, this is Tom Scott with the news from Ford County for the week of November 8, 2020. We begin, as we have been, with the latest press releases from the local public health department on COVID-19. And I must say, this has not been a good week in Ford and Iroquois counties. Ford County, as of November 12, 2020, there are a total of 440 cases. That is an increase of 115 since last week. There are a total of 19 deaths, which is an increase of 4. There have been 9,551 tests administered. In the cases, there are 58% of the cases are female, male 42%. In Iroquois County, there were a total of 1,014 cases, which is an increase of 278 cases from last week. There are 889 confirmed cases, 125 probable cases, 572 have been released from quarantine, 407 are currently in home isolation, 13 are hospitalized, and 22 people have passed away, and that is an increase of 2 from last week. Females make up 56.6% of the cases, males 43.4%. The test results, 17,292. Positivity rate of 5.1%, which leaves a negativity rate of 4.1%. Both of those updates are dated November 12, 2020. Turning to the news, we have a story here on the front page of the Ford County Record. Alleged Ford County militia leader's trial on mosque bombing underway. St. Paul, Minnesota. 3 years after the firebombing of a mosque in Minnesota, Ford County man is on trial for his alleged role in planning and carrying it out. Michael B. Harry, 49, of Clarence, has been locked up for more than 2 years on those federal charges, as well as others in Central District of Illinois, linking him to the attempted arson of a doctor's office in Champaign, where abortions were performed, possessions of a machine gun, and conspiracy to interfere with commerce. After several delays in both trials, U.S. District Court Judge Donovan Frank is presiding over Harry's trial in St. Paul, which is set to start Monday, regarding the August 5, 2017 bombing of the Dar al-Farouk Islamic Center in Bloomington, Minnesota. Federal authorities allege that Harry, a former Ford County Sheriff's deputy, was the leader of a small militia group known as the White Rabbits, who allegedly hated Islam and wanted Muslims out of the United States. In that incident, a black powder pipe bomb went off about 5 a.m. at the mosque as several men were gathered there for morning prayers. No one was injured, but there was damage to the mosque which shook from the explosion. 6 months later, an anonymous tip to the FBI about the mosque bombing in Minnesota and the November 7, 2017 attempted bombing of the women's health practice on South Neal Street in Champaign led authorities to Harry and other members of his group. They were arrested in March 2018. Michael McWhorter and Joel Morris, also of Clarence, have pleaded guilty for their participation in the mosque bombing and are expected to testify against their former leader. Two of the five charges in the Minnesota indictment allege that Harry damaged the religious property and obstructed the free exercise of religious beliefs by force or threat. The other three counts relate to the use of explosives to carry out the damage. Harry's trial in the Central District of Illinois will go forward after the completion of his Minnesota case. Assistant U.S. Attorney Eugene Miller is the lead prosecuting attorney in the Illinois case. Harry's attorney in Urbana is Assistant U.S. Public Defender Elizabeth Pollock. Judge Michael Mim is presiding over Harry's Illinois case. Also on the front page of the Record, Chamber unveils alternative Christmas parade plans. Gibson City. Just as most of 2020 has played out differently because of the coronavirus pandemic, so will celebrating a popular event during the holiday season. The Gibson Area Chamber of Commerce has announced an alternative approach to the 26th annual Christmas parade, which encourages families and individuals to be festive while avoiding large gatherings. Instead of the traditional parade, floats will be displayed in North Park and an event being called Christmas in the Park. The event is scheduled for 5 to 9 p.m. Thursday, December 10th, and Friday, December 11th. Planning Committee member Susie Tongay said she and fellow committee members Mayor Daniel Dickey, his wife Paula, and Sandy Griffith came up with the idea as a way to avoid having to cancel the event. Now that we've gone on with the planning, we're very excited, Tongay said. We think this may be one of the best we've had. Families, businesses, church, and organizations are encouraged to enter floats or lighted Christmas-themed display that will fit in a 30-foot area. The planning committee will approve entries in advance and designate spaces for them. Those wanting to enter will need to provide a 100-foot outdoor rated extension cord to access the available electricity on a first-come, first-served basis. Otherwise, participants may need to provide a generator. Businesses who sponsor the event with monetary donation or by providing floats will be recognized on a sign. In addition to the floats, a pavilion will be decorated for Christmas. A new feature this year will be that children will be able to drop letters to Santa Claus in a North Pole mailbox. Return addresses should be included, as the children may receive a response from someone at the North Pole. The Gibson City Melvin Sibley High School cheerleaders will be on hand, adding an element of live entertainment. Keep an eye out for the cute characters among the floats, Tongate hinted. The Gibson City Police Department and volunteers will direct traffic. Organizers are encouraging visitors to come north on Sangamon Avenue, turn right on 13th Street, where they will be directed to enter the west exit of the park. They will drive through the U-shaped drive, then go north on Lot Boulevard, where the overflow of displays will be there if there are more than can fit in the park. As they leave, they will go southbound on Sangamon Avenue and can then stop to shop and eat. We're encouraging businesses to have specials, Tongit said. Local food vendors will be serving food downtown, and a sign at the end of the park display will encourage visitors to head that way for food and shopping. We're encouraging people to stop at all the Gibson area businesses and restaurants, Tongit said. As in previous years, the 18-foot-tall downtown Christmas tree will be set up by Thanksgiving, and there will be wreaths and Christmas music downtown. Event organizers think this year's event might even surpass the success of previous ones. For instance, Tongate said it should be easier for people to visit the downtown business this year, since parking spots won't be taken up for the parade as they normally are. And, she said, visitors will have a chance to see the lighted floats more than once. Registration forms for the Christmas in the Park entries are available by contacting Daniel Dickey at mayor@gibsoncityillinois.com. It is requested that completed registration forms be returned to him or in the City Hall outside drop box. For more information about registering an entry or becoming a food vendor, contact Daniel Dickey at 217-781-1905. Or Tongate at 309-825-0311. Food vendor applications are available by contacting Tongate at sktongate@hearthsidefoods.com. Excuse me, that's hearthsidefoods.com. They can be returned to her at that address or dropped off or mailed to her at Hearthside Foods. Vendors must be from Gibson City and provide homemade food. Those who sign up by November 10th will be included in advertising. In conjunction with the event, community members are invited to decorate their homes and businesses. For homes, will be chosen as $250 Gibson Bucks Prize winners in the Light Up Gibson City contest. Registration forms are available by contacting Paula Dickey at ProtonMail.com or Tongate at SusieTongate@Hotmail.com. Submitted photos of the homes will be put in a gallery on the Chamber of Commerce Facebook page, and the one that receives the most votes will receive an additional $250 Gibson Bucks prize. Entry forms are due by Monday, November 30th. Decorating must be completed by December 1st when judging will begin. It has been a big draw to Gibson City, Tongate said, of the annual parade. Last year, the 25th, was the biggest ever. We had an estimated 3,000 people at the parade. We are bringing people to our town. I think it's going to be great. We're anxious to see how this goes. The new format will eliminate the biggest challenge of previous parades, the logistics of traffic control, arranging floats, keeping everyone safe, and keeping the floats intact while in motion. Could the Chamber of Commerce keep the new format in the future? I would not be surprised, said Tongate. On the inside of the Ford County Record, we find some people being recognized. PBL Junior High School names October Students of the Month. Paxton Buckley Loda Junior High School recently named the October Students of the Month. Michaela Ware and Gavin Keith were selected from the sixth grade. The seventh grade students of the month were Anna Hudson and Johnny Rodine. Riley Sloan and Charlie Urich were chosen as eighth grade students of the month. Each month, the junior high selects students from each grade level as students of the month. Students are selected by their teachers, and it is an honor to receive this recognition. Overall, this is a great way to recognize students that are going above and beyond. Students that are selected are given a certificate, have their picture put in the hallway, on the website, and in the Ford County Record. And we have Cisna Parkman receives recognition from Iroquois Memorial Hospice. Members of Cal Bauer's family had the opportunity to meet with Cal when he recently presented a Veterans Appreciation and Recognition Certificate and lapel pin for his service in the United States Army, according to information from the family. Presentation was given by the Reverend John Franklin, Master Divinity, Chaplain Coordinator, Iroquois Memorial Hospice, with Aaron Hattenbaugh, IMH Volunteer Retired Air Force Captain, part of the ceremony via iPad. The program is through IMH partnering with We Honor Veterans. Cal joined the U.S. Army after graduation from Cisna Park High School and served in Panama. Present at the ceremony were Jody Bauer, Cal's granddaughter, Tim Bauer, Cal's son, Melanie Bauer, Tim's wife, Lowell Katz Bauer, Cal's brother, Madeline Sedgebruch, Cal's sister, Lonnie Bauer, Lowell's wife, and Cale Bauer, Cal's grandson. For those wishing to congratulate Cal, he welcomes visitors, phone calls at 815-457-2471 or notes at P.O. Box 348, Cisna Park, Illinois, 60924. Turning to the Ford County Chronicle, we have a story headlined, Paxton Park District Cancels Breakfast with Santa. Paxton Park District's annual Breakfast with Santa event is canceled due to the COVID-19 pandemic. The Park District's Board of Commissioners discussed option for a replacement idea during their meeting on Tuesday, November 10th, but voted to cancel the event. We just have no choice, Paxton Park District Commissioner Kay Harper said. Due to further COVID-19 mitigations, the Paxton Civic Center's maximum capacity is limited to 25 people. It is what it is, Paxton Park Commissioner Bobby Kennard said. People look forward to it every year. We know how busy it gets, Commissioner Jake Perkowitz added. Paxton Park District Recreation Director Cody Evans was not present for Tuesday's meeting due to a COVID-19 related quarantine. We could be looking at a month of not having him back, Park Board President Brad Ecker said. We can make a plan, but we don't know how to plan, Richard Kennard added. Also at the meeting, according to Eckerd, Evans informed the board that 20 bags of candy remained from the Paxton Park District's Halloween drive-through event, which was a pretty good turnout. Ecker said the board's unrestricted fund was sitting at $38,000 prior to paying bills. He said the board will continue to do rentals at this point due for the Civic Center at a maximum capacity of 25 people. The board approved changing internet providers and paying a cancellation fee of $298 charged by its current internet provider, Frontier, when the board is under contract to whom the board is under contract until August 12, 2021. The board tabled the 2020-2021 tax levy for the Park District. Eckerd said he would talk to Park Board Attorney Mark Miller, who was absent from the meeting, to see if the Park District needs to get its tax levy approved prior to December's monthly meeting, and therefore needs to hold a special meeting to do so. The board tabled the digging of retention pond at Cody Park, and it also tabled the purchasing of a new door, handles, and two locks for the park district facilities. Finally, they tabled the opportunity to work with the Paxton Buckley-Lota High School Art Department on creating a new logo for the park district. And from Gibson City, Gibson City Council approves variance of zoning. Gibson City. The Gibson City Council approved a variance of zoning for 328 South State Street during its meeting on November 9th. Les Marty is in the process of purchasing the 50 by 160-foot property and was looking to build a 36-foot-wide home. However, the zoning requirements called for a house to be built no less than 15 feet off the front property line and 5 feet off the back, leaving only 30 feet. Therefore, Marty wanted a 6-foot variance, and it was approved. Also at the meeting, John Hall of WGCY offered a reminder about the burning ordinance that there's no burning allowed on streets. "I've seen a few burning on streets," Hall said. Gibson City Police Chief Adam Rosendahl said he stopped about 3 or 4 of those in the last week or so. According to Gibson City Superintendent Randy Stouffer, leaf pickup will happen hopefully by the end of this week. Council approved consideration for a medical plan benefit for city employees from the Blue Cross Blue Shield BPO. Costs for the new medical plan will increase by 0.03%. from $17,237 to $17,243, with $1,000 less out of pocket per person. 75% is paid by the city, while 25% is paid by the employee. The City Council table consideration of masonry repair for Jerry Molson Building at 135 North Sangamon Avenue until the next fiscal year. And the council approved the payment of a TIF 2 check for $1,140 and general fund bills totaling $127,503.87. And more COVID news in the Ford County Chronicle. Ford County Agency says it has no authority to fine restaurants for disregarding indoor dining ban. Paxton. The Ford County Public Health Department's administrator said her agency has no authority to fine local restaurants that continue to offer dine-in service in defiance of the governor's indoor ban. "We don't have the authority to ticket or fine a restaurant for staying open for indoor dining under Governor J.B. Pritzker's mitigation strategy," Public Health Administrator Lana Sample told the county board during its meeting Monday night. Sample was referring to the Tier 1 COVID-19 resurgence mitigation placed on the East Central Illinois region by Pritzker last week. As of Monday, 10 of the state's 11 regions, including Region 6, which includes Ford County, were under Tier 1 mitigations as a result of their increasing COVID-19 positivity rates, and another was under the stricter Tier 2. Tier 1 mitigations include the closing of bars and restaurants to indoor service and limiting the size of public gatherings to 25 or fewer, among other methods. Some Ford County restaurants, though, continue to remain open for dine-in service this week. While Sample said the local health department has no authority to fine or ticket these restaurants, she said the agency does support and go by the mitigation strategy the governor has put into place and is still working through how we can impact those restaurants with these mitigation strategies. "The governor did not necessarily give authority to local health departments," Sample said, "so we are working through the process and figuring out how we will handle the going on about the complaints that are made." Burgers and Beers in Gibson City continued to offer dine-in service as of Monday night, the manager on duty confirmed. Pueblo Lindo Mexican Restaurant in Paxton has been, too, but decided to stop offering indoor dining this week after receiving a huge volume of community complaints messages on its Facebook page. Meanwhile, many local restaurants have had their dining rooms shut down entirely since the mitigation went into effect last week. This includes the Humble Hog Barbecue restaurant in Paxton, whose owner, Ben Grice, said he definitely does not agree with the governor's policies, but also does not want to risk a legal battle and subsequent attorney costs by keeping his dining room open. After deciding to shut down its dining room, also deciding to shut down its dining room, was the Happy Days Diner in Roberts. Its owner, Cindy Thielman, told the county board that some local restaurant owners, especially those who rely heavily on revenue from indoor dining, may lose their business because they strictly have carryout now. "Nobody does carryout for our breakfast, so I have lost all my breakfast business," Thielman said. "All our small-town food establishments are going to end up going out of business because we can't afford to do this." A woman who owns a restaurant in Sibley also noted that with winter approaching, outdoor dining will soon no longer be a viable alternative to indoor dining as well. Thielman said that while she is not offering dine-in service at her diner, she understands why other restaurants are doing so at theirs. "It's about survival," she said. "Restaurants are scared to death they're going to lose their business," added District 2 County Board member Tim Nuss of rural Roberts. Meanwhile, Sample told the board that there has been a significant increase in COVID-19 cases in Ford County in recent days. On Monday, the local health department announced 71 new COVID-19 cases for the period of November 5th to 9th, bringing the total number of cases in Ford County since the pandemic start to 396. Of those, 279 were confirmed cases and 117 were probable cases. There had been 17 COVID-related deaths, including the death of a woman in her 90s, announced on Friday. 8 of the 53 new cases announced Thursday for the period of October 26th through November 5th were linked to an outbreak at Accolade Healthcare of Paxton Senior Living, but Sample said the 71 cases announced 4 days later were not associated with that outbreak. State's attorney, Andrew Killian, said Sample indicated Monday that the health department was currently dealing with 60 new COVID-positive cases that needed to be contacted in addition to over 30 close contacts, and none were related to any nursing home outbreak. "Because of that, it's overwhelming to the staff," Killian said, summarizing an email Sample had sent to him. "They have only 2 contract cases hired at this point. They're having to be up and running at the end of the week, but Sample is doing a lot of the contract tracing to assist them at this point. So it sounds like it's getting pretty hard over there for the health department." Across the state, the governor's mitigations so far have failed to bring down the rate of COVID-19 infections, and Pritzker put the responsibility for that on local officials. Now we'll turn to the obituaries for Ford County for the week of November 8th, 2020. Nicholas Balun, or Balun, B-A-L-U-N. Nicholas Balun passed away at 11:20 a.m. on Tuesday, November 3rd, 2020, at his home. Celebration of Life Services was held Thursday, November 12th, at the Izzaz Bar and Grill in Piper City. Shirley Jean Greiser Schertz. Shirley Jean Greiser Schertz passed away at her home in Saybrook, Illinois, on October 31st, 2020. Due to COVID-19 restrictions, a private celebration of life service will be held at the East Bend Mennonite Church on November 21st, 2020. Her celebration will be recorded, possibly with live stream for those who wish to watch remotely. More details will be available through the family or the East Bend website. In lieu of flowers, memorials may be made to your favorite charity. Stephen B. Lindsay. Stephen B. Lindsay, 76, of Fisher, passed away of recurring cancer with the Lord and his family on Tuesday, November 10, 2020, at his home. A graveside service with military rites will be held at a later date at Grandview Memorial Gardens in Champaign. Memorials may be made to St. Malachy Church, Rantoul or River Valley Church of Christ, then Fisher. Carol J. Obert. Carol Adair Obert of Gibson City passed away peacefully at her home on Wednesday, November 4, 2020, surrounded by her loving family. A private family service was held at Our Lady of Lourdes Catholic Church in Gibson City, with burial at Drummer Township Cemetery in Gibson City. In lieu of flowers, the family requested memorials be made to St. Jude's Children's Hospital, for Children or Our Lady of Lourdes Catholic Church. Joyce E. Nally. Joyce E. Nally, 76, of Gibson City, passed peacefully away on Saturday, November 7, 2020, at her home in Gibson City. Private family services will be held at a later date. In lieu of flowers, memorial contributions can be made to Our Lady of Lourdes Catholic Church, the City of Gibson Swimming Pool Fund for construction of a new swimming pool, or an organization of the donor's choice. Mary L. Main. Mary L. Main, 71, of Gibson of Gilman, passed away on Wednesday, November 4, 2020, at her home. Private graveside services were held at Ridgeland Township Cemetery at Thawville on Monday, November 9, 2020. Memorials may be made to the family's wishes. Theodore Ted Thiesfeld. Theodore Ted Charles Thiesfeld, 85, of Gilman, passed away on Sunday, November 8, 2020, at Rush University Medical Center in Chicago. A drive-through funeral service was held on Thursday, November 12th at St. John's Lutheran Church in Danforth. Private funeral services will be held Thursday with Reverend Maury Marburger officiating. Burial will be in the Gilman Cemetery. A celebration of life will be held at a later date. Memorials may be made to St. John's Lutheran Church in Danforth. We return to the news with a story entitled, Fire Destroys Small Shed Near Paxton. A fire Monday afternoon on a property southeast of Paxton destroyed a small wooden utility shed and its contents. An estimated 8 firefighters and 3 trucks from the Paxton Fire Department responded to the shed fire around 12:54 p.m. at 90 North 2280 East Road, Fire Chief Danny Kingren said. Kingren said the shed and its contents were a total loss. Firefighter Bobby Kingren described the small shed as a typical yard barn and said it contained a lawnmower, among other typical yard barn stuff. A woman who lives on the property told firefighters she had been using a burn barrel near the shed earlier in the day. Danny Kingren said it appears that the fire in the burn barrel caused the shed to catch fire as well. I think the nearby fire eventually from the wind, it flared up, Denny Kingren said. Kingren said firefighters cleared the scene after about an hour. And that's all the time we have for today's reading of the news from Ford County. This is Tom Scott. I look forward to reading with you again very soon.